This is the State of Things broadcasting on the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Should North Carolina raise the minimum wage? There are two bills making their way through the House. Both seek to raise the floor to $15 an hour over the next 5 years. With the current minimum wage at $7.25 an hour, a full-time employee makes just over $15,000 a year. So what are the realities of life as a minimum wage worker? Earl Bradley worked nearly 7 years earning the minimum wage at a local fast food chain before he got his big break. He was promoted to shift manager, and that advancement did not come with all of the perks that you might think. In fact, his pay raise was less than $3 an hour. Earl is also an activist fighting to increase the minimum wage in this state, and he joins us now. Earl Bradley, welcome to the State. Thanks. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Good to be here.
How long have you been at Wendy's?
I've been at Wendy's 7.5 years.
And am I right about that, that you were, for most of that, you were working at minimum wage?
Yes.
And what were you doing? Were you married, have children?
No.
You were supporting yourself on that?
I was supporting me and helping my mom.
And your mom also worked at Wendy's,
yes,
right, for a while, and she's just retired. So what's that like? We talked about $15,000 a year. What were you doing? Where were you living here in Durham?
Yes.
Yeah. Were you making it?
I was struggling, mm-hmm, with bills, and I had to juggle which bills I wanted to pay. I had to get extensions on my bills, and with my mom going out of work with back surgery, her bills was piling up. I was trying to maintain my bills and her bills at the same time. And making the minimum wage wasn't good enough, and that's why we should get the minimum wage raised to $15 an hour.
Well, I mean, some might argue that you maybe could find a little better job for yourself.
It's like every job starts off at the minimum wage
And what are you making now?
Right now, as a shift supervisor, I'm making $9.25 that I can't live off of. That's why the minimum wage should be raised to $15 an hour.
We talked about your mom. She's got a college degree, right?
Yes.
And was working at Wendy's.
Yes.
Now, again, I'd have to ask, with a college degree, if the wages were so low at Wendy's, why not find a little better job?
It's a lot of jobs out here that starts off minimum wage.
But then they go up. I mean, again, with a college degree, you'd say, okay, got my start, put a little cash away, I'm going to take this degree, I'm going to go find somebody.
It's like
more.
The jobs out here is like more fast food jobs that pays minimum wage that most people with 2 degrees or 3 that still have to turn to a fast food job to make ends meet.
Fastest growing sector in the country right now,
yes,
in terms of job growth. So when we talk about job growth and unemployment, those are the jobs we're talking about. Keep that in mind when you hear those unemployment reports. Talking with Ed Bradley, shift manager at Wendy's. Joining the conversation now, Representative Susan C. Fisher. She's a Democrat who represents Buncombe County, also the sponsor of House Bill 366, which seeks to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour over the next 5 years. Representative Fisher, welcome to the State of Things.
Thank you very much for having me.
So why do we need to raise the minimum wage in North Carolina?
Well, Earl really laid it out for us very well there. And your question, I have to pivot back to your question about minimum wage jobs. He is absolutely right, because between 2009 and 2016, the state lost more than 80,000 middle wage jobs, while more than 90,000 low wage jobs were added to the North Carolina economy at the same time. So he's absolutely right. People with college degrees, people with work experience are having to go to work at low-paying jobs. But what our bill would do is increase the state's minimum wage in 5 phases. On January 1st, it would, right now the minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. January 1st, 2020, it sets the minimum wage at $8 an hour, or whatever the wage happened to be if the federal government decided to raise the minimum wage, whichever one is higher. On January 1st, 2021, it would set the minimum wage at $10.35 an hour. January 1st, 2022 would be the higher of $12 an hour or the minimum wage at the federal level. Then January 2023 sets the minimum wage at $13.50. You go all the way to 2024 when we finally get to $15 an hour. And the thing that is really interesting about this bill is that it also takes into consideration lower wage rates for people who are physically disabled, mentally deficient or from injury, people who are economically disadvantaged or unemployed, and people who are employed by seasonal food service. So it's also looking at tipped minimum wage.
How does it affect the tip? We're talking mostly there about waiters and waitresses, that sort of thing, wait staff who earn tips and lower than the federally mandated minimum wage. How did, would your
That's
bill
right.
affect them?
Well, it would raise the tipped minimum wage over a period of time, similarly to what happens with the regular minimum wage. It would start out, interestingly, now we have a tipped minimum wage that's at $2.13 an hour. And what happens with those tipped workers is that they have to make tips to sort of bring them up to the minimum wage. With this bill, it would cap the practice of counting tips as wages and effectively establish a minimum wage for tipped employees. It sets the initial cap at $5 an hour in 2020. In 2021, it goes to $6.50 an hour. 2022, it goes to $8 an hour. In 2023, it sets the cap at $9.50 an hour. And in January 2024, it would set the cap at $11 an hour. It's a very gradual increase over time that by finally January 1, 2027 sets the cap at $15 an hour. And for all of those phase-ins, it maintains the existing provision authorizing tip pooling as long as no employee's tips are reduced by more than 15%. The interesting thing about this is that in many European countries, and I know because I have relatives in Japan, tips are seen as sort of an insult because people are already making good pay and they don't see the need for tipping. What we might see in a scenario like our bill entertains is that eventually people would not have to tip unless they just wanted to tip, and you wouldn't have to worry about it making up the minimum wage of this worker who has been serving you.
We're talking with Representative Susan C. Fisher, a Democrat from Western North Carolina, who sponsored a bill that would raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour over the next 5 years. Earl Bradley is with us, shift manager at Wendy's, and joining the conversation now is Mitch Kokai, political analyst with the John Locke Foundation. Mitch, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for bringing in the naysayer, the designated.
But why say nay? What do you think of what would happen to North Carolina? What would happen if we raised the minimum wage to $15 over the next 5 years?
Well, let me say, first of all, the good thing about this bill and the other pieces of legislation is that they would be done incrementally. We're not talking about going from $7.25 to $15 an hour right away. I mean, I think that would have a major shock on North Carolina's economy. So the idea of putting this in gradually over what's about 8 years makes a lot more sense than trying to get to 15 right away. Our organization, being a free market limited government group, is against the government mandated minimum wage at all. We think that this is not something the government should be involved in. But if you're going to have a minimum wage, the idea is it ought to be somewhere in the neighborhood of what the prevailing wage is for entry-level workers, so that it doesn't have the negative effects that it can have, which is pricing the lowest skilled people out of the job market. I mean, one of the things that you have with the minimum wage is an employer could look at someone, they don't really have much of a resume, and they say, okay, do I take a chance that this worker is going to be a good person, will show up on time, will deal well with customers and other staffers? You don't really know unless the person has some other thing they could point to, like a high school degree or a college degree. If the person's just showing up, we're talking about the lowest skilled workers. At $7.25 an hour, they could say it's worth it to take a chance. At $15 an hour, it makes it a little bit tougher to say that it does make a difference, that it does make sense to hire someone out of the blue that you don't know has any skills to deal with the types of things they'll have to do in your job.
Well, you also talk about being an organization that likes to let the market make these decisions. I mean, the fact is that the market has decided, here's what that labor is worth, here's what I can get, here's what I can pay. And you've also said that there's a risk that, look, we'll start laying people. We've already seen automation right. take hold in restaurants, kiosks, and ordering with tablets and that sort of thing. What do you think? Is there any good research that shows what happens when the minimum wage goes up beyond what, let us call it, the market has dictated?
Yeah, when the minimum wage goes up, some jobs will be lost. Now, I think the people who are supporters of the minimum wage increase are exactly right that you don't see an X to Y comparison right. that here's how many jobs you had, and as soon as the minimum wage went up, the number of jobs goes down by this. They're exactly right about that. What happens is some of the jobs that would have been put in place without a minimum wage never are. Employers say, okay, I just can't afford to hire new people, and so there is no new job. One of the more interesting things about this, you mentioned the market force. I think it's interesting about the group that Earl's working with. Their main target is the companies. And, you know, while I don't agree that there's a need for a $15 government mandated minimum wage, they're targeting the company, saying, look, you're big companies with a lot of money. You can afford this. We saw that Amazon, for example, established a $15 minimum wage. That makes sense at the size that Amazon has, that they can do that. Amazon 25 years ago, when they were just getting started, they probably couldn't have done a $15 minimum wage. So targeting the companies and saying, look, you big companies, you're taking advantage of us. You should be working with our union and you should be giving us $15 minimum wage. That's the way to go. The government getting involved and telling all these employers they have to do it, that not only hits the big companies that might be able to afford this, it also hits the mom and pop groups that might say, I can't afford to have the employees at this wage.
Susan Fisher, what about that? Maybe this isn't the government, or maybe the government should be using its clout in a different way to target these companies. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that the idea that the market should determine what a person should earn is a little flawed, because if you look at what raising the minimum wage in North Carolina would provide, it is there are 29 states that have raised their wage above the national $7.25 an hour, including conservative states like Nebraska, Arkansas, South Dakota, and Missouri. North Carolina is lagging behind, and the jobs that pay decent wages are really largely vanishing as low-wage service jobs replace the manufacturing jobs that North Carolina used to be known for. So here's what would happen. At the current minimum wage, a full-time minimum wage worker earns approximately $15,080 per year. That's $1,000 less than the federal poverty level for 2016, for a family of one adult and one child. You have in the scenario where your wage is raised, you've got an estimated 1.3 million workers in North Carolina that would benefit from raising the minimum wage to $12 an hour. That's just $12 an hour, including 750,000 of those are women. Raising the minimum wage helps the economy by boosting spending, but beyond that, it is just the right thing to do. You know, we signed the Fair Labor Standards Act into law in 1938, Roosevelt did, and what we need to just remember is that we have that poverty level wages in the U.S. have cost taxpayers $152.8 billion each year in public support for working families. So people who are not able to make a living wage are depending on government services anyway to fill those gaps. And so we all pay the price in higher food and housing costs and health care assistance costs when businesses are allowed to pay poverty wages like $7.25 an hour. when what they should be doing is paying the people who work for them enough to afford the basics on their own.
Well, let me ask Mitch Kokai, because that's a very interesting question in terms of when we talk about minimum wage or mandating wages, we're always talking about moving the bubble in the balloon, right? On the one hand, if I increase the wage, I may have to lay off workers. On the other hand, as Representative Fisher says, if we continue to allow a growing population to work at these wages, we're going to pay the other way in many other ways. So as a bigger question, Mitch, is there something the state should be doing to make sure that we don't have people working at wages that are costing all of us in terms of their own personal happiness and our state and public welfare? Should the state be using its clout in another way to make sure that people are being paid better than they are now?
I think the state probably can take some steps to deal with the target population. But since we've been talking about some of the minimum wage statistics, let me throw out these others. The average family income of people who are getting in minimum wage jobs is about $53,000 because the minimum wage worker is not the primary breadwinner. When you think about the people who are the real targets for this, the single parent trying to live off the minimum wage, that's about 4% of minimum wage workers, and minimum wage workers are a small percentage of total workers. So there's definitely a way for government to come up with programs that will help that target population without saying every entry-level job, whether it's a big corporation or a mom-and-pop store, has to pay its workers starting at a wage of $15 an hour. Because the real negative impact that's going to have is the people who are walking in the door without anything on their resume who say, I need a job. Some employers are going to say, I just can't afford to hire you at that wage.
We are talking about whether to raise the minimum wage in the state of North Carolina. We're talking about it today on The State of Things. Mitch Kokai is senior policy analyst with the John Locke Foundation, also talking with Democratic Representative Susan Fisher and Earl Bradley, who's a shift manager at Wendy's. Well, what about that, Susan Fisher, that maybe this is just too large a target, that maybe the target area, we should be looking at a smaller range of individuals to try to improve their wage?
Well, I have to say that I disagree with one of the statements that was said, because you're looking at not just low-skilled and small amounts of workers who work at minimum wage jobs. We're looking at many thousands of people who work at minimum wage. What we are seeing is that the minimum wage job is a family's primary income. We have 93% of working people in the state who would benefit from a raise in the minimum wage. They are older than 20 years old, and they rely on their minimum wage job as their family's primary income. So it's not just a small number of people who would be benefiting from this. It's not just a small number of people who actually need this, because we're talking about people who are college educated. And because of the changing, economy in North Carolina, the manufacturing jobs, the bigger wage jobs that help a person to realize that middle class life they don't exist. It's low wage jobs, whether you have been to college or you have not been to college. Those are the jobs that are available. So I think that what we have to really remember is that raising wages is the right thing to do. And we will all do better when everyone, black, white, and brown, can earn a living wage and afford the basics. We're talking about a minimum wage should not be just a wage that you get by on. It should be, as FDR envisioned it, a wage that you can save on, that you can build for the future on, that you could buy a car, that you could buy a house, that you can take care of your family. And this bill would allow that to happen, where people could afford the basics and have a fair opportunity to work hard and succeed.
So Democratic Representative Susan C. Fisher, a Democrat from Western North Carolina, who sponsored a bill that would raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour over the next 5 years. Representative Fisher, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Also talking with Mitch Kokai, political analyst with the John Locke Foundation. Thanks, Mitch.
Thank you, Frank.
And Earl Bradley, shift manager at Wendy's. Thank you for talking with us.
Thank you.
And just ahead on the state of things, the next tech revolution, those better jobs, are we missing out? We'll talk about why big corporations are crowding out the smaller innovations that could be taking place with the fiber revolution. Stay tuned.